This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The U.S. Supreme Court is considering a groundbreaking case that could change the way voting maps are drawn. A bipartisan voter rights group brought suit against Republican leaders in Wisconsin who redrew political maps to their advantage in 2010. Gerrymandering, as it is called, has a long history in the United States. Both parties have done it, and unless it was racially motivated, the high court has never found it in violation of the Constitution. The Wisconsin case is now before the Supreme Court, and justices heard oral arguments this Tuesday. It holds important implications for partisan gerrymandering in other states, including North Carolina. Rusty Jacobs is a political reporter with WUNC, and he has been following the story. Rusty, welcome.
Thanks, Frank.
Remind us of the basics in this Wisconsin case, will you?
Sure. As you said, 2010 census takes place. Republicans take control for the first time in a long time in Wisconsin and redraw districts. And since then, voting results in that state skew more and more heavily in favor of Republican candidates, while voter data actually show that Republican voters represent fewer than 50% of the voting population. And that critics of partisan gerrymandering point to these results as an example of extreme gerrymandering that violate constitutional rights and the rights of voters to be represented by the people they want to elect to office.
And yet political gerrymandering has been with us forever, so this question of extreme, I guess, must be on the table. Tell us about the oral arguments this week.
Well, you know, the plaintiffs and the complainants say that more and more you're seeing states, even like North Carolina, where you either have evenly divided voters or you may even have voters from one party holding a majority in terms of representation, and yet those results are not being borne out in the election results. And they're saying that is a result of extreme gerrymandering, whereas critics, again, just like in Wisconsin, people here defending maps that are under attack in North Carolina say population changes and demography, where you have Democrats essentially packing themselves into urban districts, so they're not evenly distributed. That's why you're seeing the election results, not because of gerrymandering.
Yeah, but gerrymandering has gone on for a long time. Democrats, when they're in power, do it. Republicans do it. They overtly and quite openly say these maps will benefit us, not about population. And they don't even say that. And they don't have to because it's not illegal. So what is it about this case in this moment, do you think, that has allowed this case to get to the Supreme Court? And some observers are saying this one might mean a big change in political gerrymandering. What's new?
I don't know if it's new because a Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy's been on the court for a while. I would say a lot of the arguments that took place in the Wisconsin case are focused on him because he has expressed reservation, skepticism, concern about the constitutionality of partisan gerrymandering, extreme partisan gerrymandering in other cases. That's right. The court hasn't struck down any partisan gerrymandering cases, but there have been expressions of reserve about results of the kind you see in Gill versus Whitford, the Wisconsin case. There's a Maryland case, even in North Carolina cases. Justice Kennedy has talked about his unease with gerrymandering cases, yet his concern is there's a lack of what he would call a workable standard. How do the courts intervene in a way that doesn't violate people's rights and doesn't, you know, violate essentially what happens in the ballot, in the ballot box? They don't want to get too involved, but if they can figure out a standard that could be applied broadly, then they might decide that gerrymandering should be fixed.
And that's the important thing, because as you pointed out, the court has held open the possibility that there might be a case of gerrymandering that would be in the extreme. And the question now is by what standard would we judge? That seems to be the case in this and what's at stake in this particular case. Other gerrymandering cases are moving through the courts, one in Maryland and one in North Carolina. So first tell us about Maryland, because that's unique. It was the Democrats in control of that legislature, right?
Right. I mean, and that's just, you know, we have a lot of the same arguments at play. But there in Maryland, you have, I think, something along the lines of a 2-1 split in favor of Democrats in terms of voter representation in that state. But you have a far more heavily skewed delegation in favor of Democrats. So the number of Democratic representatives in Congress for Maryland doesn't match the more evenly more even divide between voters of the two major parties. You know, in North Carolina, too, people who look at results in North Carolina say, you know, you don't have a split among voters in the major parties that would justify an outcome. I mean, since the 2010 census, you can see the results of North Carolina congressional elections skewing more and more heavily towards Republicans now at a 10-3 divide that does not match the split among voters in the voter data.
All right. Rusty Jacobs, WUNC politics reporter. And of course, you can find links to his reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Thank you, Rusty.
You're welcome.
Well, as the Wisconsin case plays out in Washington, a U.S. District Court here in North Carolina, as we said, is about to take up another political gerrymandering case. Anita Earls is executive director of the Southern Coalition for Social Justice. She is also an attorney for the plaintiffs in that case. Anita Earls, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us more about the case that you have brought in the state of North Carolina.
Well, along with the Campaign Legal Center, who were counsel for the plaintiffs in Wisconsin, we represent the League of Women Voters and individual voters who brought a similar claim against the 2016 congressional districts that were enacted here in North Carolina. Common Cause filed a separate lawsuit on a different legal theory. The two cases have been combined, and our trial will start October 16th.
Well, tell us about the theory. Rusty just mentioned a minute ago that the divide here, and maybe the case for this being extreme political gerrymandering, rests on voter data. In other words, the total number of people who voted for Democrats and the total number and the division and the percentages in the congressional delegation. Is that it?
Well, no. I think the what we're measuring is a little more nuanced than that. We're not seeking proportional representation, but we are seeking equal treatment for voters of both political parties. And so our theory is very much whether you're favoring Democrats or favoring Republicans, it's not constitutional. And for our case, we're saying that violates the First Amendment, your freedom of association, you should not be subjected to discrimination because of your viewpoint. So it's a First Amendment claim and also a 14th Amendment claim that your right to equal protection, every voter should have their vote should carry the same weight no matter which party they belong to. And so our theory is when you treat voters of different parties differently, then you're violating the Constitution. And the First Amendment claim brought by Common Cause is much more of an absolutist. Any consideration of partisanship is unconstitutional. So that's how I would distinguish the two theories in these two different cases.
You were in Washington, D.C. earlier this week to observe how the oral arguments were playing out in the Wisconsin case before the Supreme Court. Tell us more about those arguments and what you saw happening.
Well, it was a very active court, and the justices were arguing with each other as much as they were the counsel making the arguments. For me, I think the pivotal moment and the biggest implication for North Carolina came when the court started raising a hypothetical. And the court said, well, what if the state constitution said, as long as you comply with all other traditional redistricting principles, keeping counties whole, compactness, contiguity, as long as you comply with all of those, you must also favor this party, Democratic Party, or you must also favor the Republican Party. What if the state constitution had that provision? Would it be constitutional? And without exception, everyone was agreeing that would not be constitutional. Counsel for the state of Wisconsin said, no, that would not be constitutional. And why that matters for North Carolina is because in 2016, when the legislature went about drawing the congressional districts, they had as an explicit criteria that they would make sure the maps had a partisan bias, a 10-3 result for Republicans. So while it wasn't in our state constitution, it was an explicitly adopted criteria. So that seemed to me significant for North Carolina.
But gerrymandering is a term that goes back into the last century. It has been going on for a long, long time, and it is clearly designed to help the party in power. How is this any different than those gerrymanders of decades past that have passed legal muster?
Well, I think there's a couple of differences. One is that the social science techniques to measure what's fair and unfair, thanks to computers and the ability to run lots of numbers quickly, is more sophisticated. So that means both you can draw districts with more precision and you can use all sorts of data to make sure you get the voters you want in the district. But it also means that we can measure the fairness and unfairness with greater degree of precision. And what the court, I think, is searching for is my sense is they don't want to say you can't consider politics at all because they think that's unrealistic. And just note, some states have passed constitutional amendments saying you can't consider partisan data. This is Florida. But the court was not willing to go that far and say every state must be like Florida. So some consideration is all right. How do you know when you've crossed the line in a constitutional sense? And what's different now is the efficiency gap measure and other types of social science measures give them a line they can draw.
All right. So I've got about 30 seconds left, but if the court decides to throw out the maps in Wisconsin, what does that mean for North Carolina?
Well, we still have to go to trial, but we're confident it would mean that the 2016 congressional districts are also not constitutional.
Would this mean that the courts would have to do this, I guess, on a case-by-case basis? Then once that happens, everybody would have to decide, yeah, ours, we're going to take ours to the courts. There's no sort of blanket rule that would throw out.
No, they are considering some blanket rules that would mean only about a third of the states would be considered.
Anita Earls, Executive Director for the Southern Coalition for Social Justice, also an attorney for the plaintiffs in the North Carolina political gerrymandering case that is currently moving through the courts. Thank you so much for being on our program.
Thank you.
You can find links to this program and to all of our work at thestateofthings.org. Just ahead, a part-time journalist is propelled to national fame and infamy after tweeting from a Trump rally. We'll hear more about that on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.